Counsel for Appellant, please approach.
Thank you. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Larry Smith. I represent the plaintiffs in this matter, Michael Preston and Penelope Turgeon. Mr. Preston and Ms. Turgeon each bought brand new Honda vehicles. And when they purchased these vehicles, they got with it a warranty, a new vehicle warranty, as was presented to them. And as they expected, the warranty would cover all mechanical breakdowns. Each of them were operating their vehicle on a roadway normally when the power steering of each of their vehicles went out and the car died. They contacted Honda, asked them to bring the vehicle into a repair facility where a Honda certified repair technician came and told these people, each of them, that the soy wiring of their vehicles, rodents attacked it, chewed them up, and caused this breakdown. This is not covered under their warranty. This is going to be under their own dime. However,
counsel, why wasn't that a design defect as opposed to a warranty issue?
Well, perhaps it is a design defect. And we didn't bring a breach of warranty case because the warranty specifically excludes design defects.
Right. What's your theory? What's your theory of the case?
So we have two different theories, Your Honor. We have a theory under the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act theories. There's a deceptive practices in the omission of material facts, mm-hmm. and then there's also unfairness claims in the company-wide decision to not repair these particular problems, this materials defect.
In the Illinois Consumer Fraud case, you've got to show a communication which was misleading or omitted a material fact. What's the communication that Honda made that didn't have a fact?
Respectfully, Your Honor, that would be a communication that is misleading would be a misrepresentation. And we do not bring a misrepresentation case here. This is an omissions theory case. Now,
but how does that fit under the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act?
So the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act, it's a unique act because it was created to be more expansive than common law fraud. It was created to be a remedial act and give consumers rights against deceptive and unfair practices. So the requirements of a claim under the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act are deceptive or unfair act or practice in the course of commerce with the intent that the consumer rely on the deception or the act or omission and proximately causing damages. In the statute itself and in the case law and Connick that we presented by the Supreme Court, notably absent from the requirement is that the consumer plead that they actually relied on the act or omission.
I'm not asking about reliance. I'm asking about the element of communication. What is the communication that Honda made to your clients that omitted the material fact that the soy-based wrapping was on the wires?
Honda communicated the warranty and said that the warranty will cover mechanical breakdowns.
And that was the only communication that you're claiming now. You're not claiming that they failed, that they omitted to make a statement regarding the soy-based wrapping on the Monroney sticker, right?
Right. We're not saying that they had to make the statement on the Monroney sticker. The Monroney sticker is what touts the warranty and tells what's going to cover.
I thought the warranties were received post-sale, though. What is the pre-sale communication that contains the misrepresentation or omission?
We allege that the warranty book is given post-sale because it's in the vehicle when they get the car after they sign. But the warranty itself and what it has is pre-sale, and we allege it's a pre-sale touting.
How was it transmitted to the
On the vehicle itself, on the Monroney sticker is one way it's done.
Well, I thought you just said you weren't relying on the Monroney sticker.
No, we're not. Let me clarify. We're not saying that they made a misrepresentation on the Monroney sticker. And we're not saying this is a misrepresentation class or case. This is an omission case.
Are you saying that they should have said something about the soy-based wrapping on the Monroney sticker?
No. We're saying that they, as far as an omission theory is concerned, they should have said something at any point. A communication of any kind would have satisfied the omission.
Mr. Smith, my question is, as I understand the Illinois statute, an element of the Illinois statute is that a communication was made by the defendant to the plaintiff. What communication was made by Honda to your plaintiffs that omitted the soy-based wires?
The warranty. The communication of the warranty.
The warranty was only delivered after the sale, right?
No, Your Honor. The warranty is communicated on the vehicle, on the sticker that says this vehicle is warranted. Before the consumers buy the vehicle.
Not the Monroney sticker?
It is the Monroney sticker.
Okay, so I just want to make sure that I understand your answer, because I think we're all getting at the same thing. As I understand it, the statute that you're relying on in this case, the claim in this case, requires a pre-sale communication that requires the misrepresentation omission. And I'm trying to understand what communication you're relying on. It's the Monroney sticker? That's your position?
Yes, and it's the general knowledge that the consumer's given about the warranty before they bought the vehicle. Both of them were told that they're buying a vehicle that is warranted. And that communication alone, without telling them at some point afterwards, before they buy the car, hey, there's more to this. There's a hidden problem that you don't know about. We've changed the ingredients on this vehicle. We've made it into soy. Rats are starting, or rodents are starting to attack it, and we're not covering that. And for whatever reason, we're calling it a design defect, which isn't covered by the warranty. And what we haven't put in this case, which isn't part of it, they've used an act of nature defense on it. But we're not here talking about that. They've basically just been denying the claim, saying it's not covered under the specific terms of the warranty, even though these people are led to believe that. In our case...
Didn't the district court hold that your clients failed to give Honda fair notice regarding which components were included in your complaint? What's your response to that?
Thank you. We believe that the district court erred when it found that we did not give the defendant proper notice or fair notice of the grounds of the claim. Under Rule 9b, parties must state when alleging fraud, particularity, the circumstances constituting the fraud, the who, the what, the when, the where, and the how. Nowhere, though, does this imply that we have to break down a complicated vehicle and name a specific component part or identify the cubic foot within the vehicle where this occurred. There's a case, Hart versus Chrysler. It was a Central District of California case where it was enough to put Chrysler on notice of the defect by just saying it was the manual transmission and then describing the symptoms of it. I think we've done far more than that. We've identified the particular parts. We state the power steering wiring is the issue. We point out the Honda service records, specify the parts replaced. We even give those numbers. Each was part of the power steering, so we made that clear. For Honda to sit and say, you know, we don't know what they're talking about, they didn't give us notice, respectfully, they have to be kind of giving us a poke, poke, wink, wink on that. They made this vehicle. They're aware of it. They've been dealing with complaints about this for years, as we've alleged. So this isn't something that they're completely unaware of and that we got them out of the dark. This is something that they know of, and we told them very clearly. So as far as complying with Rule 9 requirements, which is what we have to do, the who, what, when, where, and how. Well, who, we identified Honda. The what, knowledge that they've changed these wires to soybeans and rats are attacking them. The when, prior to plaintiff's purchase. The where, at Honda-authorized dealerships. And how, by failing to disclose a material issue to consumers that might change their mind.
So why wasn't this a contractual claim, a breach of warranty claim?
Well, because the terms of the warranty, according to Honda and its warranty, weren't breached. We're not saying that Honda made some promise here that they're not fulfilling. What they did was, this is kind of like the Pappas versus Pelly case that we cited, where the defendant made the same argument. Aren't you just making a breach of warranty argument? And the court said no. They're saying that there was a material fact that you knew about, that had that been disclosed to the consumers, that might alter their decision to make this purchase.
What about an implied warranty claim at any point during the pleadings from original to amendment? Was there thought given to that?
Our thought was to not throw any warranty claims in this case at this point, given what we were looking at. We didn't want to make a kitchen sink complaint that we'd be up here arguing about things that really don't belong up here. We really felt that the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act, as a remedial statute as it is, fits neatly into this case. As as the Connick and Pappas case point out, when you have known facts that are being omitted that might change people's minds.
But counsel, your complaint appears to sound a little bit in breach of warranty because you said Honda refuses to cover rodent-related repairs under its manufacturer's warranty. You also say Honda claims the rodent tape is the solution to prevent further costly out-of-warranty repairs. And then you define the class as owners of a Honda vehicle who experienced a power steering malfunction attributed to rodent damage during the applicable new vehicle warranty period, and Honda denied warranty coverage. So it's, in a way, it could be concluded that you're trying to plead around a breach of warranty, but you still have those breach of warranty type allegations in the complaint.
Right, but the case doesn't fit into the breach of warranty in Honda's warranty book. It doesn't fit in. So we really can't have a breach of warranty here, and that's why Illinois' Consumer Fraud Act is remedial. It actually allows for not just deceptive, but unfair acts or practices. And let me talk about that for a moment.
May I ask you a question? You asked for leave to amend. It was denied you. If you were to amend your complaint with respect to the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act, what facts would you allege? You mentioned that both of your plaintiffs were told the vehicle was warranted. Would you allege actual facts of Honda telling them that it was warranted beyond the warranty that was given to them?
If given an opportunity to amend the complaint,
what would you say?
I would definitely read Judge Real's opinion and definitely shore up those things which he thought were a little short. And we probably would assure that we were a little more clear about how that warranty was taught to us.
Mr. Smith, tell me what facts you would allege. You've been with this case for a long time.
We would allege facts that dealt with directly with the actual conversations that Mr. Preston.
Those conversations were with?
Mr. Preston and the Honda sales folks, Ms. Turgeon and the Honda sales folks. We probably could expound a little bit more on that to make it a little bit clear how the warranty was touted to them. We would definitely add those facts.
Could you give a name of the Honda salesperson who actually made the representation?
I don't think at the pleading stage we have to name the actual name of the salesman at this point.
The question was whether you have to. Can you? Now, tell us.
I can't because I'm not looking at Mr. Preston's contract that has the salesman's name on it. Okay. But we do have one, and there is a name on it. We do know who he spoke with. But we don't name that person, and I don't think it was necessary in the complaint.
Are you relying on the contents of that contract to say that those representations were made? Or are you relying on conversations outside that written contract?
Right. We're not relying on the contract itself because actually the contract is just a contract to buy the vehicle. The issue that we have here is when you're buying the vehicle, there's something about it that you don't know. There's a hidden problem that's not being disclosed to them.
So would your position be that the salesperson neglected to tell the buyer about this problem, the particular salesperson who's listed on the contract?
No, we think it's a company-wide problem, and that's where our unfair claims come in as well. This is a company-wide issue. It's not just happening, and it didn't just happen to Mr. Preston or Ms. Turgeon. It's happening to thousands of consumers.
But the problem is, if you can't tell us who said it, when they said it, isn't that not sufficient to state a claim if you can't give us the details?
We said who in that it was the Honda authorized dealerships. Again, at the pleading stage. And we said when it happened, it was prior to the sale of the vehicle.
Honda authorized dealerships does not give us, so if the other party wanted to take a deposition of the person that you said made this representation, they can't depose the Honda authorized dealership. They need to know who is the person, what was the date, what was the time, so they can pinpoint who was on duty at that time so that we can depose that person and get an answer as to what was said in the pre-sale conversation.
Thank you. And with the few moments I have a little time left. Mm-hmm. Honda would know that long before we do. They're the salespeople. It's their store. It's their cars. They're selling. They have access to these documents. They know this stuff before they do. So if they want to take a deposition of the salesman.
Your clients know who they spoke with.
I think,
and they know when they spoke with the person, and they know where they spoke with the person. And
yes,
that's something that should be in the complaint to give notice to Honda as to where to start to look for the answers.
And we do name the store where they were bought and the date that these vehicles were purchased. So we do name those things. We do name the when and where. I do, I'm out of time, but I hope that you'll leave me at least a moment to rebuttal.
I will.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Michael Mallow, Shicardi and Bacon on behalf of American Honda. So many issues that your honors have raised. Good questions. Judge Wynn, let me just make quick work of the implied warranty claim question that you asked plaintiff's counsel. There was an implied warranty claim in the original complaint. Plaintiffs did not pursue an implied warranty or a breach of express warranty in their first amended complaint after they had read Honda's motion to dismiss the original complaint. So there was one. It was abandoned in this case. Just in terms of the issues to cover, plaintiff continues to make reference to a new vehicle warranty. As your honors can see from plaintiff's complaint itself at ER 28, where plaintiffs included a copy of the new vehicle limited warranty, it is a new vehicle limited warranty. Limited is in its name. It is not an all-expansive warranty. And in fact, plaintiff says in their briefing that a consumer cannot see the limited warranty prior to the purchase of sale. If plaintiffs...
So isn't that an issue of what would be covered under a warranty as opposed to whether or not there was a communication that did, failed to warn these plaintiffs about a problem with the vehicle? So whether or not it's covered under the warranty, we don't get to that until we determine whether or not the statute applies and whether or not this is a breach of warranty case. So for me, I'm trying to... Garner, from you, was there a communication that fit within the Illinois statute?
There is no communication identified in the First Amended complaint that would qualify under the Illinois statute. So the answer is no, there is not a communication.
Well, other than the Monroney stickers, which the district court said would not be sufficient.
Well, and in fact, the Monroney sticker, the plaintiff actually does not identify the specific statement from the Monroney sticker.
What he's identifying is the failure for the Monroney sticker to say anything about the soy-based wiring.
Well, first, the question is, was anything said about the warranty at all? The second question is, if something was said, what was it said? What was said? Plaintiffs seem to suggest that the representation is an all-encompassing warranty that would cover, and counsel said it to you again this morning, any mechanical problem.
Well, I think counsel was talking about representations that were made by the Honda salesman in orally regarding the automobile. If he's allowed to amend, he will allege time, place, and content.
But when counsel first got up and addressed your honors, he said that the plaintiffs purchased a vehicle with a new vehicle warranty, and they expected it would cover all mechanical problems.
Well, he said that there was a sticker on the car that said warranty, that the car was warranted.
Well,
is that true or no?
Did the sticker say the car was warranted? It said that it comes with a limited warranty.
All right.
The word limited actually puts customers on notice that it's not going to cover every mechanical problem and every difficult and every issue that a customer may have.
But
it is a limited warranty.
That coupled with the representation made by the salesperson, would that be sufficient to constitute a communication?
It would not, because the salesperson is from an authorized Honda dealership. Those are independent entities. American Honda is not the dealership, and the dealership is not American Honda. There may be a case against the dealership, but a statement by a salesperson that is not directed or under the control of American Honda would not apply to American Honda. So no, the discussions between a salesperson at a dealer and the plaintiffs here would not be sufficient communication from American Honda about the warranty. And let me point something out to your honors about plaintiff's position that a customer does not get or cannot have access to the language of the limited warranty prior to sale. The Magnuson-Moss Act requires the availability of warranty language prior to purchase.
Which act is that?
And I'm sorry?
You said the something act?
Magnuson-Moss.
It is 15 U.S.C. 2302 B1A and B4A. So if a customer sees a limited warranty identified in the Monroney label, which, by the way, these plaintiffs never alleged that they saw, then that warranty is available to them. They can either ask the dealer for it, or they can go online, because an alternative way of providing the warranty is to go online. There are no allegations in this complaint, none, that American Honda violated Magnuson-Moss by failing to provide access to the limited warranty, which contains the language that it only applies to workmanship and materials, which contains the language that it doesn't apply to acts of nature, which are the provisions that led plaintiffs to abandon their express warranty claims. Those provisions are available. There's no allegation suggesting that they are not, and that American Honda violated federal law by failing to make those warranty, that warranty language available. Your Honor's asked whether this case is just a breach of express warranty or a breach of warranty claim, and that the ICVA allegations are intended to plead around the inability to bring a breach of warranty claim. I think counsel, in fact, admitted as such, but if there's any question, and Judge Rawlinson, you read a number of excerpts that I would have pointed out to, but there are some that you have not. At plaintiff's opening brief at page 9, there's a heading, and it says, "The plaintiffs sufficiently alleged consumer fraud against Honda for its refusal to cover under warranty repairs caused by its own conduct." On page, paragraph 65, which is quoted in plaintiff's reply brief, they say, "Honda's unfair conduct," and this is the conduct that they say is unfair. This is the trigger that they claim leads to the violation of the ICVA. "Honda's unfair conduct," quote, "failing to notify consumers that there exists a condition with the vehicle that is not warranted and will require their own out-of-pocket expense to repair." Or, "failure to warrant its defective wire coating insulation." There is no question that this case is based on plaintiff's belief that Honda breached its warranty by not covering repairs needed as a result of rodent damage. It is equally clear that ICVA precludes that precise type of allegation. Avery versus State Farm, the Illinois Supreme Court case, specifically says, as a matter of law, plaintiff's consumer fraud claim may not be based on the assertion that State Farm breached its promise to restore plaintiff's vehicles to their pre-loss condition. In this case, it can't be based on Honda's refusal to cover rodent damage under its limited warranty. When allegations of consumer fraud arise in a contractual setting, as it has in this case, and all one needs to do is read the complaint and the amended complaint to see that, when allegations of consumer fraud arise in a contractual setting, the plaintiff must prove that the defendant engaged in deceptive acts or practices, and this is an important word, distinct from any underlying breach of contract. Avery explains that a deceptive act or practice involves more than the mere fact that a defendant promised something and then failed to do it. That type of misrepresentation occurs every time a defendant breaches a contract. Here, and this is in Greenberg as well, in Avery, the consumer fraud and contract claims rest on the same factual foundation. No distinct deceptive acts are alleged. If your honors go back and take a look at...
Is it your position that he cannot, there's no conceivable way that he can amend his complaint?
There is no conceivable way to
Why
amend
did you
his
say
complaint.
That?
Because at the end of the day, what plaintiffs are unhappy with is Honda's refusal to cover the repairs under its warranty. And they say it over and over and over again. And so long as this case is tethered to the warranty, Avery and the federal court cases Greenberger versus Geico and Langendorf versus Conseco would preclude bringing an ICFA claim to plead around a breach of contract or, in this case, breach of warranty claim.
I don't know what it's like under Illinois law, but in California law, a plaintiff can plead inconsistent counts.
Right. It can. But under Illinois law, under ICFA, Avery says they cannot do that. And in Avery and Greenberger and Langendorf, the plaintiffs say the defendant failed to live up to their contractual obligations, just as the plaintiffs say here. And then they say, well, we are not, our ICFA claim is not based on the breach of contract. It's so much more. It's the failure to disclose what the defendants are up to. In the case of Avery, it was failing to allow for the use of OEM or original manufactured parts in the estimate of repair damage. In Greenberger, it's the I'll just list out. You have failure to use to disclose that original OEM parts would be used in repair estimates. In another case, you have the failure to disclose that proof is required by a claimant. The same thing. Here, what they're saying is, hey, you didn't tell us rodent damage is covered. And let me remind this court, and plaintiffs do not argue otherwise, rodent damage due to wires in engine compartments of vehicles has been a problem since there have been vehicles. Plaintiffs do not suggest otherwise. And plaintiffs, in this case, have dispensed with the notion that, in fact, the wires are responsible for bringing the rodents into the vehicles in the first place. If your honors look at page 13 of plaintiff's reply brief, they say the following. In talking about Judge Reel's dismissal order, the court misconstrued plaintiff's allegations entirely. Plaintiff's claims are not premised on the fact that wires are defective because the rodents chew on them. So they're saying that that's not their claim. Plaintiffs do not suggest that the wires were chewed because the rodents were lured to the cars in general, as the court's opinion seems to indicate. So that can't be their claim. Instead, plaintiffs properly allege that the animals are eating the food and food doesn't belong in an engine compartment. At this point, I'm not sure what the claim is, but it's not that the soy wires are defective. And
I think the claim is that you didn't tell them that rodents ate the wires.
I'm sorry?
You didn't tell them that rodents ate wires, and you knew it.
Rodents eat wires. They've been doing it since there have been vehicles.
You're saying it's not necessary to tell everybody that that's a matter of common knowledge?
Absolutely. Now, what the plaintiffs are saying is somehow what they're saying – on one hand, and then disavowing on the other, is that rodents chew wires more frequently in Honda vehicles. But on the other hand, they're saying, but they, rodents don't get into the Honda engine compartments because they're about the presence of alleged soy wires. They're back and forth on that. The one thing that is clear is that plaintiffs brought this case because Honda wouldn't cover their claims under its limited warranty. And that claim cannot be brought under ICFA. And no amount of changing the allegations in their pleadings is going to change the fact that this case is based on breach of warranty and that plaintiffs are trying to get around the inability to bring the breach of warranty claim using ICFA. And that's not permitted.
Did Honda sell peppery tape that rodents didn't like?
Honda does sell as a potential remedy for those who have rodent problems, tape that is intended to detract.
Is there any evidence that Honda told these folks you ought to buy some of this tape?
I'm sorry?
Is there any evidence that they told these folks that you ought to buy some of this tape?
I don't know if there's evidence. The plaintiffs allege that the dealers suggested the Honda tape after the fact.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Let's give 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. To begin with, I just want to start with one quick comment that counsel made a few times, and that's regarding the fact that rodents have been damaging vehicles forever. I didn't know this. And maybe the panel has different experience than I do. Maybe counsel has different experience than I do. But our complaint alleges that this is something that has cropped up after after Honda changed the ingredients to the vehicle. And that's kind of an important factor here, is that they changed the ingredients. This isn't the same car it's always been for as long as Honda's been around. And I've never heard that rodents have been chewing wires for as long as cars have been around. That's news to me, and that's not part of the pleadings, and that's not part of our case. I didn't get a chance to discuss unfair claims because we were asked questions about what communications were made to the plaintiff in this matter. And we also have unfair claims here. And unfair claims under the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act don't require an actual communication. There's an abundance of Seventh Circuit cases that discuss the Illinois Consumer Fraud and Deceptive Business Practices Act that talks about it. And if a plaintiff can show conduct that is contrary to public policy, immoral, unethical, oppressive, and or unscrupulous, or causes substantial harm to consumers, you have an unfair claim. And you don't need to have all three. One or two can stand on their own. In this case, at the record, it's starting at page 30 in the record, we allege it offends public policy because given that auto manufacturers are governed by reliability and safety standards, this is immoral, unethical, oppressive, or unscrupulous, as these omissions still occur despite years of consumers' complaints. And this causes substantial harm to consumers, and I don't want to leave that off, because these mechanical failures, besides diminishing the value of the vehicles, are causing people to go out of pocket. Michael Preston's bill was over $2,000. People buying a new vehicle do not expect their power steering to go out, and then you have to pay $2,000.
Communication is unnecessary if the claim, if you're making a valid, unfair claim.
Yes, Your Honor, that is it. And I'm now out of time, and I want to thank the court very much for my opportunity to be heard today.
Thank you. Thank you both counsel for your arguments. The case just argued is submitted for decision by the court.